You're listening to Locked On Pistons, your daily Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Duncan Smith. You can follow me at Duncan Smith MBA on Twitter. You can find my work on pistonpowered.com. You can follow that account at pistonpowered as well. We're going to take a look at the track record of Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Bauer, as president of basketball operations and general manager. When Stan Van Gundy was hired, he wanted to avoid a situation like he got into in Orlando, where he did not have the job security beyond his contract as head coach. So in order to avoid getting into a situation like he found himself in Orlando, where the star decided that he wanted him gone, in order to avoid that vulnerability, he insisted on control of basketball operations. So Tom Gorris made him both head coach and president of basketball operations, and then Van Gundy hired Jeff Bauer as general manager. So Bauer takes care of the day-to-day operations, and Van Gundy runs the basketball team and is a factor in bigger, big picture kind of situations. So, signings, trades, draft picks, naturally, all these things go through not just Bauer, but also Van Gundy, who would have the final sign-off on all of these deals. So while Bauer might do all of the groundwork, all the legwork, none of these go through without Van Gundy's approval. And for that matter, Van Gundy himself might be responsible for a decent number of these deals, as far as the actual work on the ground goes, to the research and setting up these trades and the communications with other teams and so forth. So all of that kind of structure is in-house. All we can really do is speculate as to how the division of labor is set up. But I do want to take a look back at the Van Gundy Bauer track record as far as transactional moves go. So we're going to set aside the coaching thing for another day, and we will get to the coaching thing at a later date, certainly. But right now, I just want to take a look at and give sort of an evaluation of primarily his free agent signings, the trades that he's made, and his very short, remember, it's a short draft record. I think that some fans who are really concerned about Van Gundy making this coming draft pick, I think that they have an unfounded concern over his draft record. We're gonna take a look at that probably last year. We're going to get started just going through in fairly chronological order. We're gonna go through the free agent signings, both external and internal. So re-signing team free agents such as Reggie Jackson, such as Andre Drummond, and also things such as, we'll get started here with signing Jody Meeks to a 3-year $19.5 million deal. Meeks was hurt often, and he never shot the way that he was expected to when he signed. He had a breakout shooting season with the Lakers the season before, in 2012 and 13. He was signed by the Pistons the season thereafter. He wasn't healthy, and he didn't really follow through on the promise that he had as a shooter. So the Pistons managed to move on from him pretty easily, just trading him to the Magic for a future second round draft pick. So essentially they signed him, it didn't go well, and then they just moved him for cap space. Fairly harmless deal overall. And he really, while $19.5 million over 3 years might be kind of a steep price at the time, which is under the cap climate that this deal should be judged, even now, if the Pistons still had him on the books, if he was a promising shooter, that money would be money well spent if he had the capabilities and could deliver the way that the Pistons hoped from him. DJ Augustine was another signing. He was signed for 2 years, $6 million. In retrospect, I think a lot of people were a little bit iffy on this one, but Augustine actually really performed and was a valuable trade piece in the future. He was good as a backup, but then after in 2014-15, after Josh Smith was stretched and Brandon Jennings went down with a ruptured Achilles, Augustine had a career stretch. He was basically the prototype, or an example rather, of a point guard who Stan Van Gundy sort of revolutionizes. He hasn't done much since. He's moved on. Off the top of my head, I think he's with the Nuggets. He's been a backup third point guard since then, so he served a purpose with the Pistons, and his greatest value was part of a future trade piece, which we'll get into. Caron Butler, he was signed for 2 years, $9 million. That's a lot of money for not a lot of return on the court, but he was useful as a piece in a future trade as well. Again, we're going to get to that. Chronologically speaking, the next move here would be waiving Josh Smith. And it's not just waving, but stretching. I did a detailed breakdown of this move in a piece on Piston Powered this morning. And I do suggest that you read that there, because we could dedicate an entire podcast to the stretching of Josh Smith. At the time, he was unspeakably dreadful. I believe that of all players who had played more than 20 minutes per game and had a usage of 20% or higher, Josh Smith had one of the 10 worst true shooting rates since the year 2000. Essentially, the Pistons were paying $14 million a season for Josh Smith to be one of the 10 worst players of the millennium. Getting rid of him was a must. The methodology that they used to get rid of him, the mechanism they used to get rid of him, if you could have traded him, that would have been better, obviously. If you could have just swapped him for some second round draft pick that will never convey, that'd be superior by far. But I think that by the time that Van Gundy had made up his mind that there was simply not going to be any use for him, that there was no market for him. So they could either keep paying him $14 million per season to stay home, or they could use a stretch and pay him $5.4 million per season from that point until what's going to end up being the end of the 2019-2020 season. So basically, if you started a four-year college program last fall, you will graduate a couple months before Josh Smith comes off the books. It's kind of a stark reminder of the albatross that got hung around the Pistons' neck when Tom Gorris and Joe Dumars signed him, but that's the situation. So Josh Smith has a little extra relevance right now, because this summer is when his initially signed contract would come off the books. So if he didn't get stretched, the Pistons just ate the contract, then they wouldn't be paying the $5.4 million this summer, and the summer after, and the summer thereafter as well. So, let's look back fondly at Josh Smith. Oh boy. The next signing we'll take a look at here is Aron Baynes, 3 years, $20 million. It was a deal that was widely panned at the time, but Baynes has been pretty decent. He is not an offensive threat, but he has been a defensive stalwart. I posted some stats, some of his defensive stats a few days ago on Twitter in a screenshot from Synergy. And you can go back and look at that if you so choose. But he has been one of the best defenders on the roster. He had the second best defensive rating on the team this past season. He had one of the best on-off differentials on the team. Essentially, the Pistons ended up getting a really serviceable backup big man for a reasonable price. We're still waiting to see. It can come any day now. His opt-in date is June 20th, so we're just a little bit over a week away from finding out whether we're going to have another season of Aron Baynes or not. Without talking about the trade for Reggie Jackson, we'll talk about his signing, because again, we're going to go signing by signing first before we talk about the trades. Reggie was signed to a 5-year, $80 million contract. At the time, it was based largely on really just 2 good months, even a month and a half of really productive play. His proficiency in the pick and roll with Andre Drummond was very notable. And the Pistons decided they liked what they saw enough that they would break the bank for him. And, you know, this is another deal that was panned at the time. The Pistons, he was a restricted free agent, so they really could have just waited it out and let the market set his value and then just match whatever deal came his way. They probably could have saved, you know, it's likely that nobody was going to offer him a deal like this, where he's going to be getting paid $16 million per season for the next half decade. So they could have done that, but Van Gundy decided that he wanted to just pay this guy for what he thought his value was. So it ended up being a deal that, at least after his 2015-16 season, people were on board with this 5 years, $80 million deal. He had a breakout season. This is another deal that might end up being a bit of an albatross, though, depending on how his rehab goes this season. We all know how he fell right off the face of the earth as far as playing quality-wise went, thanks to knee tendonitis last season. So the verdict is really out on this signing. But at the time, it was questionable. But for at least that first season of the contract, Reggie Jackson was... Reggie Jackson showed his value there. We're going to have to revisit that probably in a season or so and see how the fan base feels about that. The Pistons signed last summer Ish Smith to a 3-year, $18 million contract. With the salary cap boom, that's a pretty affordable price for a competent backup point guard. And Ish ended up being more than a merely competent backup point guard. He carried the team for the first 20 games, starting at point guard. He ended up closing the season, not nearly as well as he started the season, mind you. But he ended up being a much more vital fixture to this team than expected. And that was a deal that was not widely beloved at the time. But now, I mean, you won't find anybody complaining about that contract now. John Lure, 4 years, $42 million. At the time, people thought it was ludicrous. He had a really good first half of the season, and now the people who did not think it was ludicrous are on board with it being a ludicrous contract. He had a very poor second half of the season. So my money is on Lure being the most, if not the most movable, the most easily parted with as far as the Pistons front office goes. I think that it would be fairly easy to replace him on the trade market or on the cheap veteran signing market without really too much hardship. So that's a contract that is dubious at best. Boban Marjanovic, the Pistons signed him for 3 years, $21 million. It is an interesting deal because Boban is certainly a curiosity. He's offensively gifted, but defensively he is a liability. He's not mobile. And as a result, even though the Pistons signed him to be the presumptive future backup center, he couldn't see time over Aron Baynes. Boban played less than 300 minutes on the season. I think he appeared in 39 games off the top of my head. Just, you know, he wasn't a regular. He wasn't a feature in for a guy who was expected to take over in this coming season. He didn't see the floor a comforting amount of time. So Boban is questionable. If Aaron Baines opts into his contract this year, you may see Boban on the way out. The Pistons signed Andre Drummond to a 5-year, $130 million contract this past season. It was basically a 4+1, meaning that his final season is a player option. He is a very polarizing max contract figure. There's no question that he's very talented, he's very athletic, but we all know the concerns about his energy levels, his effort, his defense, the free throws. He's a mixed bag for $26 million per season, to say the least. So, that's another contract that right now doesn't look great. Mind you, any team would have probably come very close to breaking the bank for him last season after his breakout 2015-16 season. At the time, there is some concern, certainly, but not nearly as much as there is now. So that's another one that we'll enjoy evaluating in a season, most definitely. The final signing was Beno Udre, who they signed for the veteran minimum after the preseason ended last season. The Pistons had a battle to the death between Lorenzo Brown and Ray McCallum for the third point guard role, and neither one won, basically. Stan Van Gundy decided, rightly so, that neither one was up for the job, and signed Beno to the veteran minimum after the Miami Heat waived him. So there's nothing bad to say about Beno. He was a completely serviceable backup and third point guard, depending on whether Reggie Jackson was available and in play. Beno will most likely not return next season. He's getting a little bit long in the tooth, and he's coming off an injury at the end of the season last year. So the Pistons will probably look to get younger at the backup third point guard position. So we're going to take a look at the trades that Van Gundy has made. Van Gundy and Bauer, pardon me. But we're going to do that after we take after we hear a word from our sponsor, SeatGeek. SeatGeek is an app that you can download to your phone, and you can use it to purchase tickets to your favorite sporting events or concerts. Basically anything that you need a ticket for, you can get it through SeatGeek, whether it be shows, the theater, what have you. SeatGeek can cover it all. You can use their deal score feature that allows you to compare value, say, between like Ticketmaster, StubHub. It's more or less an aggregator, so you don't have to go to these different sites and check out their prices for the same seats here, there, or wherever. SeatGeek has it all right there in that app for you. If you use the coupon code LOPISTONS, that'll let them know that you came from us, and you'll get a $20 rebate off your first purchase. So you just go over to the settings tab in the app and add LOPISTONS to get $20 off your first purchase. Especially as we're getting to, we're nearing the opening, the September opening of Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit. Nobody's really familiar with the seating layout. Nobody's really familiar with how ticket values are going to be. So your best bet is almost certainly to be using that SeatGeek app and getting your tickets through there, especially in the early days as you're kind of getting accustomed to what seats are where. The app also lets you visualize from different sections of the arena or the stadium or the venue you're at what the floor or the playing surface looks like from the different seats that you're looking at. So it's really an all-in-one app, and it'll make the whole process a lot cheaper and more efficient for you. So Again, that's LO Pistons. Go to the settings tab, throw that code in there, save $20 off your first purchase, and they'll know that you came from us. So let's take a look at the trades that the Pistons have made under the Van Gundy Bauer era. In 2014, they traded Will Bynum for Joel Anthony. Bynum is out of the league now. Joel Anthony wasn't an on-court threat by any means, but he was a good locker room guy, a veteran that the Pistons could probably be using today. Without a doubt, a veteran presence is a lacking on this roster. Also in 2014, the Pistons traded Tony Mitchell for Anthony Tolliver, if we're talking about a veteran presence, a guy who's been there, a guy who's done that. That's Anthony Tolliver, certainly. The Pistons were going to move on from Tony Mitchell regardless, but the Phoenix Suns came calling in order to dump Anthony Tolliver's salary, and it worked out pretty well for the Pistons, and Tolliver's a free agent again this summer, so we may be seeing a return of Anthony Tolliver, and almost certainly that would end up being a plus expectation signing for the Pistons if they ended up going back that way. The Pistons acquired Reggie Jackson for DJ Augustine, Kyle Singler, and a 2017 and a 2019 second round draft pick. They flipped DJ for Reggie. They moved on from Kyle Singler, who is barely rotational with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It'd be nice to have a second round draft pick this year, but you know, you're not going to lose that much sleep over a lost second round draft pick pretty much ever. So my phone fell. That's great. Especially if Reggie Jackson can return to the season, to the form that he had 2 seasons ago, then like this deal continues to be an absolute win for the Pistons. If not, then is certainly less so. But the jury is out at this point for that move. The Pistons traded Jonas Jerebko and Gigi Datome for Tayshaun Prince. This was a questionable deal, to be sure. Tayshaun really wasn't a factor for the Pistons in that season, in 2014-15. I don't think that he was especially happy to be back in Detroit. He wasn't re-signed. And if you look at the outgoing pieces, Jerebko is a rotational piece for the Celtics, and Datome is in Europe right now. So it'd be nice to have been able to keep Jonas Jerebko around. Karone Butler and Sean Williams were traded for Ersan Ilyasova. Butler and Williams are just, you know, gone in the wind, essentially. And Ilyasova was valuable as a player, and he was even more valuable later as a trade piece, as you'll recall. We'll go into this later on, but Ilyasova was a pretty important trade piece. The Pistons turned a 2020 second round draft pick into Marcus Morris, Reggie Bullock, and Danny Granger. Danny Granger was released in the summer of the 2014-15 season. He was a shell of his former self, essentially. Whereas Marcus Morris has been the starter, starting a small forward for the Pistons ever since. Reggie Bullock has had some nice moments. He's been injury plagued, but when he's been out there, from time to time, he's been an NBA player. We can say that much at least. Marcus Morris is certainly outplayed the value of this trade. He's outplayed the value of his contract. He's making about $5 million per season thanks to an incredibly team-friendly deal signed between him and his brother, Markieff, and the Phoenix Suns, which the Pistons are benefiting from now. Steve Blake was acquired for Quincy Miller. Blake was just plain bad almost through and through, basically. The Steve Blake experiment was a complete disaster, and Quincy Miller is overseas. Next trade we've got here is Ersan Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings for Tobias Harris. Ilyasova and Jennings were expiring contracts. Tobias Harris is a highly skilled young tweener, basically, who for the majority of last season was the best Piston on the floor pretty much at all times. So the Pistons knocked this one out of the park. This was the Pistons have had some good wins in the trade market, but this was by far the definitive win. The Pistons traded Spencer Dinwiddie to the Chicago Bulls for Cameron Bairstow. It was ostensibly sort of a courtesy move to trade Dinwiddie to the Bulls because Dinwiddie had no future with the Pistons. The Pistons were set in their ways as far as backup and third point guard, or so they thought. And so they thought that they could move him elsewhere and he could have, you know, better opportunity elsewhere. The Pistons quickly waived Bairstow, and then the Bulls quickly waived Spencer Dinwiddie. He ended up bouncing around again with the Bulls thanks to a summer league stint where he really showed out. And now he's a rotational player for the Brooklyn Nets. Dinwiddie had a true shooting percentage that would have been second best on the Pistons last season. Off the top of my head, I think he would have been the Pistons' best three-point shooter as well. So the Pistons basically gave up on Dinwiddie just a couple months too soon, really. And that's unfortunate because Bairstow is certainly not going to be returning to the NBA, whereas Dinwiddie is back and is, he's a more than serviceable NBA player. We're going to go to the draft record, finally, and wrap this thing up there. We'll start with Van Gundy's first draft pick, and that was Spencer Dinwiddie as a second round pick. He didn't develop right away. He was injured coming out of college, which is why he fell to the second round in the first place. But Dinwiddie is a rotational NBA player, and most second round draft picks don't end up even being that. It takes, especially a young point guard, it takes a couple years to get the NBA game down, to get a handle on how things work in the NBA. And basically Dinwiddie just developed along that same track, and you can't fault the draft pick. Spencer Dinwiddie is a second round draft pick who has already basically achieved the goal of a second round draft pick. The next draft we've got on the board here is the 2014-15 draft, in which Stanley Johnson was the Pistons' first round draft pick. He went 8th to the Pistons. Looking back at all the mock drafts, the majority of big time mock drafts, whether it be SB Nation, CBS Sports, Fox, Draft Express, he was not a unanimous number 8, but he was very much a consensus. He was well slotted at the spot that he went, and while the jury is still out on whether Johnson is going to be a good NBA player or not, it's early. He just turned 21. And while maybe we can fault Van Gundy's development abilities, that's definitely a topic for another day. It's hard to fault the draft pick itself. There were options there, but Van Gundy ended up just going with the option that he liked best, which is really what you would, rather prefer having your drafter do. Get the guy that fits your vision best. And at least his perception at the time of Stanley Johnson was, this is the guy that fits my vision. And, time is going to tell whether that's going to be the case, but that draft pick itself, there's nothing wrong with it. We can talk another day, though, about how he has developed these draft picks. Darren Hilliard was the second round draft pick for the Pistons. We're going to see about Hilliard. He had some significant minutes last season. He was a part of the rotation in December, and he didn't really show a whole lot. There's going to be some concern that the Pistons may move on from him this summer and take the $1.4 million he's due and spend that elsewhere. Time will tell, but it's really hard to judge a second round draft pick harshly, because there's really just not that much upside or hope for second rounders to do much at the NBA level. Finally, the last move we've got on the board here. Well, the last two moves we've got on the board here consist of the draft picks from the 2015-16 draft. The Pistons drafted Henry Ellenson 18th, and he played a much bigger role with the Grand Rapids Drive than he did with the Detroit Pistons. It was disappointing to see him not get much in the way of playing time, and virtually nil in the way of meaningful playing time. Ellenson was projected higher. He was considered to be something of a steal. He was going as high as 10th in some mock drafts. I believe CBS Sports, off the top of my head, I think CBS Sports had him 10th, going to so going all the way down to 18 was a pretty decent steal for the Pistons. It's not like they made a reach for like some sort of a prospect that was, you know, in the 30 to 35 ranking. They got a guy who should have gone higher, and then essentially just buried him on the bench and buried him like in the west part of the state of Michigan. And that's a concern. That's a concern near on par with the development of Stanley Johnson thus far. So we're going to see if Van Gundy decides that Henry Ellenson is going to see any playing time this season. We're going to see if we're gonna find out what Van Gundy really thinks of Henry Ellenson this season, because you know we're past the rookie growing pains, and the sophomore season now is going to be an important period in Ellenson's Pistons career, and is also going to be an important part of evaluating Van Gundy going into what is going to be his final contract here. Not this season, but the season after. The Pistons also drafted Michael Benajay in the second round. Benajay was a non-factor for the Pistons. He's an older than you would like second round draft pick. He was drafted at the age of 24. He'll be 25 in his sophomore season. So, you know, we'll see if Benajay pans out to anything at the NBA level. I think just about everybody would guess probably not. But, you know, this is going to be his make-or-break season if, in fact, the Pistons decide to keep his contract on the books. His guaranteed date is July 15th, and his contract is partially guaranteed for $500,000, which means that the Pistons would save about $750,000 for cap purposes if they were to waive him before the middle of July. So time is going to tell on that front as well. In a nutshell, this has been sort of a recap of all the moves and transactions that Van Gundy and Jeff Bauer have done as Pistons executives. So if you have any comments or disagreements or agreements, for that matter, on these evaluations, I'd love to discuss it. Best way to do that is to hit me up on Twitter at DuncanSmithNBA. And I'm always happy to hear from my followers, the listeners to this podcast, and questions and comments, good, bad, and indifferent. Always happy to hear it. And I'm not always able to reply, but I read just about everything. So once again, signing off. This has been Duncan Smith. We'll catch you tomorrow.